You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to The Profile podcast. God calls us to use our influence to share his love and goodness. For some, this is in leadership. I'm Andy Peck, and for the past 19 years, I've been interviewing Christians to find out how to lead better. Taking the initiative isn't always easy, so I hope you'll benefit from this latest conversation. The Profile podcast is brought to you by Premier Christianity magazine. Subscribe today and get full online access and the print magazine every month at premierchristianity.com.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
It's my joy to welcome you to another conversation designed to support and encourage Christians who lead. Having been born on and grown up on the Isle of Wight, I have an understandable affinity for rural areas. In terms of landmass, rural areas make up 90% of England, 98% of Scotland, 82% of Wales, and 80+% of Northern Ireland. The Isle of Wight is itself 85% rural. But when it comes to numbers living in rural areas in the UK, we're talking around 17%. And although some rural areas include reasonable-sized communities, this represents something of a challenge for church leaders keen to make sure that no one is left out from hearing the gospel. The larger and thriving churches tend to be in towns and cities, and many rural churches have struggled, especially with the drop in numbers involved in agriculture and mining and other industries. The Church of England has some grand aims as it seeks to turn around what has been largely negative trends in terms of attendance, and especially keen that people in rural areas are reached in ways that are appropriate for the multivarious contexts that exist. To help on strategy, it has supported a number of projects in rural areas, and it has been the job of my guest today to look through these and discern what we might glean in terms of strategy going forward. So wherever you lead, I hope you'll find some applicable ideas in our chat. My guest's name is Richard Tiplady. He has been my guest a number of times when serving with Global Connections, as British Director of European Christian Mission, as Principal of International Christian College Glasgow, which closed in 2015, and more latterly, he also came on the show to share leadership lessons following a near-death fall mountain climbing in the Lake District in March 2020, sustaining a broken neck, ankle and elbow, and head wounds that required 65 stitches. But thankfully, nothing life-limiting or permanent. So welcome back, Richard, and welcome to the fact that you're still alive.
Thanks, Andy. It's lovely to be here and lovely to be with you again.
I understand you've been reviewing 6 completed evaluation reports and 4 ongoing projects. Tell us where the areas were being researched and how it all came together.
So these were projects funded in 10 projects in 8 different dioceses of the Church of England, all in largely rural areas, funded since 2015, and as part of the major funding that the Church of England does, it requires an evaluation at the end of the funding cycles. And quite a lot of them had evaluations, some are very close to requiring it, and I was asked to do a review of all the reports and all the soon-to-be evaluated projects to see what kind of learning can be identified from across all of them, rather than all the learning staying very localised. Most of the dioceses were in the west and southwest of England. So Winchester, which I think includes your own Isle of Wight, Salisbury, yeah, Bath and Wells, Hereford, Exeter. And then there was a few outliers in terms of Suffolk, the East Midlands and Cumbria, but all substantially rural parts of England.
Okay, great. And I understand that they weren't directly comparable.
No, very, very different, very varied indeed. It was down to each diocese to do whatever they wanted. They came up with their plans, they came up with their projects, and then they applied for funding to address them. So there was the inevitable challenge of the use of buildings. We have an awful lot of church buildings that are fairly empty, and they are a bit of a burden to local churches that have spent all their time just maintaining them. There was training exposure to rural ministry for ordnance. Rural areas find it particularly difficult to recruit people to go and serve there because it's perceived as challenging. There was the development of shared identity across a bunch of parishes that have been joined together. I mean, we hear these stories of large groups of 10 to 15 parishes that are joined together with a single vicar. So how can they support each other and share their resources and gifts with one another rather than continuing in glorious isolation was a question that quite a lot of the dioceses were wanting to address. The need to reach out to children and young people. There are children and young people growing up in rural areas. Some of them seem to do quite well, people like you do okay. but again, that's not an area where there's a large number of young people, and it is where there are large numbers of young people that churches tend to be able to attract them. So what do you do when you've only got a small number of young people in any particular village or small town? And then there were pioneers, people who were really trying quite left field things, quite new things, sometimes quite far away from the existing local church, to break new ground and build new relationships. So it was a very diverse set of initiatives, and that gave its own challenges in terms of trying to work out what the shared learning could be, but actually also showed me that there was a great deal of creativity. There was a great deal of a sense of possibility and optimism out there that it isn't all doom and gloom. And actually, there are a lot of good people with good ideas trying different things. So rather than coming up with a solution that says, here's one size that fits all, here's the solution, what we found instead was there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of creativity, there's a lot of different things going on. And I'd see that as an asset, not as a problem.
Sure. We're talking Church of England, of course, but sometimes you'll have in the same village a couple of churches. I don't know if there are any shared works going on in any of the 10 that you looked at.
The perhaps the most coherent one is Carlisle Diocese, Cumbria, where they have a strategy called God for All, which is an intentionally ecumenical project. So it isn't just the Church of England. It involves churches of different denominations working together. And that seems to me to be a really healthy dynamic and something that, frankly, we need wherever we are in the UK, we need to be thinking about. We don't have the luxury of fighting amongst ourselves. I think it's ridiculous. The things that unite us are far greater than the things that are different. I mean, in the end, my philosophy is, or my theology is, Jesus is Lord. And if someone else can say Jesus is Lord, then they're my brother or sister in Christ, and that'll do. Everything else is stuff we can disagree on, we can debate, but Jesus is Lord is a strong enough foundation for me to work with other people. And I think we are seeing that more and more, particularly in areas where the church is a bit thin on the ground. I think that's where we're beginning to realize we don't have the luxury of sitting in our own little comfort zones and disagreeing with one another.
Sure. And some people have posited the idea that within youth work, particularly, and you mentioned the challenges of ministering to young people in rural areas, that within youth work, shared youth work can often function quite well, because you might have two or three churches, each with half a dozen. Why not pull that? Now, I don't know whether those types of initiatives have been demonstrated within the 10 projects.
The two dioceses where I saw that most focused were, again, Carlisle, but also down in Herefordshire. Both of which were taking a network church model. Now, they're not new. We've had Youth for Christ in the past. We've had groups in the past like Crusaders that are now called Urban Saints. You know, the idea of interchurch youth work is not a new thing. But what we're seeing is that's happening more and more. And again, it just comes back to if you've only got a relatively small number of people of any generation or any age group or any demographic, they benefit from meeting Christians from other tribes and traditions as well, and growing and learning together. So it's, I think this comes back to what I said earlier, that there's a willingness to try new things. There's a willingness to forget old boundaries. There's a willingness to forego perhaps things that people thought were important in the past, and recognize that what unites us is much greater than what divides us.
So, Richard, we're talking Church of England and the parish system, which, of course, has served generations of Christians. And you mentioned one vicar maybe having to serve a number of local churches. Again, I appreciate you're not here to critique Anglicanism, but is it time to think more about lay leadership? Because that's a part of the solution.
I think it was ever thus. to be honest. There's plenty of good evidence across different churches that the most vibrant churches and the healthiest churches are ones that have a substantial amount of, shared leadership. The Church of England has a particular phrase for this, which they call collaborative leadership. It's the same thing where, you know, there may be a vicar and a whole bunch of lay leaders of various types, but that's not just a Church of England phenomenon. But yeah, I mean, again, the Anglicans have actually been talking this kind of stuff for a long time. So Bob Jackson, who is a well-known Anglican church growth researcher, 20 years ago in a book called The Road to Growth, talked about this. And he said, well, you've got this sort of shared parish network that any paid church leader, any vicar or curate should concentrate on the places where there's most potential for growth. And every other place should have their own local leadership, whether that's a lay preacher or a local worship leader or what. There are Anglican specific terms, but it doesn't matter what church tradition you're from. We all have these different roles. Mm. One thing that did come across that intrigued me quite strongly, and on reflection isn't a surprise, is that there's less and less of an appetite for people to step up and maintain the existing system. So it's one thing to say, yes, everybody's lay leadership, but you've got to have the lay leadership leaders there that want to do it. Mm. And I'm not sure whether it's a lack of confidence in the existing system or whether it's a kind of post-COVID tiredness or what, but there seems to be less of an appetite for people wanting to step up and say, yeah, I'll help keep the show on the road. But what there is a corresponding increase in people saying, but I've got an idea of my own I want to try. And what I found was a number of dioceses that, and Hereford was one, St. Edmunds being Ipswich was another, Sutherland, Nottingham was another, all of whom were saying, do you know what? Let's follow the energy. Rather than where are the gaps and how do we fill them, their philosophy is increasingly, where is God at work and how can we reinforce that? Now, that can create a challenge, because there is there's a great deal of existing church system that does need maintaining and people don't want to see disappear. But actually, one of the hard decisions that maybe the Church of England and all churches need to face is, where do we allow existing things to decline so that new things can increase? I call it the John the Baptist methodology. You know, he said that he would decrease so that Jesus could increase. An analogy came to mind recently when I was driving in the eastern side of Scotland, where I live on the west of Scotland. And we've had a number of big storms in the last few years that have knocked down very large forests. And it caused dismay when that happened, really quite beautiful forested areas. And what happened was some of these named storms came from the wrong direction. We have the prevailing wind from the southwest, and we had a bunch of northeasterly storms, and the trees just didn't have the roots to stay upright.
Right.
And it caused devastation. But it was fascinating driving through these areas a few years later to see the old trees gone, but a whole bunch of new growth emerging.
Yes.
You know, that's what nature does. I mean, it's the kind of classic phenomenon. What a tree falls over in the forest and it gives space for new life, you know, new trees, new plants to emerge and fill that space. Jesus was really fond of nature metaphors. He used them all the time. So I think we're fairly free to do the same.
Yes, indeed.
In fact, I'd go as far as the German theologian Jürgen Moltmann, because he says that creation is a foretaste of the kingdom. So it's not just that Jesus used the metaphors because they were handy and visible, but the dynamics of creation, the dynamics of nature, are a visible manifestation, a visible showing forth of what the kingdom of God actually is like. And part of that is sometimes quite majestic stands of trees fall, but new life emerges. And I don't think that's a terrible metaphor for us to engage with. And we're certainly seeing that happening in the Church of England with a lot of new energy in rural areas and people wanting to do new things and being quite excited by them.
But it's worth just mentioning, Richard, that for non-Anglicans, that it's you're required to be ordained in order to officiate communion, and that is something of a stumbling block for lay leadership. So you could have lay leaders in place, but they wouldn't be able to preside over the Lord's Supper, whatever, or communion, or whatever the local person says.
That's a
big challenge.
It is a big challenge for them. I mean, there is the language of lay presidency that the Anglicans will use, the concept of reserved sacrament. There's an increasing number of Anglicans that don't put parish communion at the centre of their worship either. You know, that,
sure,
that
sure.
Every church tradition has its constraints. What Christians tend to be quite good is finding ways around them.
Okay, fair.
I mean, that to me is, in fact, that to me is the story of the Book of Acts.
Yes, indeed.
and the story of church history ever since.
Sure.
But, you know, theologians come up with rules and then the Holy Spirit finds ways of getting around them.
Yep.
And then theologians realize it was okay after all.
Well, keep you on the theme of leadership. You mentioned pioneer church leaders, and the Church of England for a number of years have been training pioneer church leaders. A slightly different approach to, if you like, the standard parish vicar style approach. Clearly, leadership is key. You mentioned some innovative approaches. Do you need to be a particular kind of church leader to be able to face and overcome the challenges of a rural area?
I think the scope for you, whatever your gifts, skills, and calling. So, in the last few years, I have run a lot of pioneer ministry training courses, and I've had quite a lot of church leaders attend those courses, as well as people who are more obviously aspiring pioneers themselves. And I've had a lot of church leaders say to me, "Yeah, that's not me." But my response to them has pretty universally been, "No, it might not be, but you will have people like this in your congregation, and you can use your authority and your positional authority as well as your personal authority to create space for them to flourish." That they are gatekeepers. Church leaders are often gatekeepers, and this was something that I've tried to do in. You mentioned some of the jobs I've had in the past, and when I was in some of those previous jobs, I saw my role as the, particularly say as a chief executive, to do what I would call run interference, which is an American football term, where you run to protect the person with the ball. And what church leaders can do, if they're not necessarily pioneers themselves, is use their influence, their authority, their power, bluntly, to protect those that are pioneers. Not everyone in an organization or a church welcomes change, because any change is by definition a criticism of the status quo. And because you wouldn't change it if it was okay. And people have often poured their lives into trying to sustain something. So when some smart aleck like me comes along and says, "Oh, we should change things," then that can be quite hurtful. So there is a role for diplomacy, there's a role for pastoral care, but equally there's a role to protect those that are wanting to bring change. And so some church leaders will themselves be pioneering. I've had plenty of conversations with curates and vicars who are very pioneering in their own right. But I've had plenty of conversations with people who are not. But they often, their eyes light up when I say to them, "Yeah, but there's still a role for you in this." It's sometimes called ambidextrous leadership, where you've got to be able to simultaneously maintain what is while creating space for what is new, what the new things might be. And that is a particularly challenging thing to do, but established leaders or senior leaders are in a good place to do both. They can sustain what is and support those who are giving their lives and their energy to sustain what is, while also supporting and releasing those who want to do new things. And that seems to me to be a particular skill set that is particularly useful for church leaders today, because we're not in an either-or situation, we're in a both-and. There's a lot of fruit happening in established churches that a lot of good things happening in pioneering situations. Let's not put them in conflict with one another. We need a solid theology of the body of Christ that recognizes that we need ears and eyes. We don't just need one or the other.
Within evangelism in the UK, Richard, clearly courses like Alpha, Christianity Explored have been an enormous success across the board. I mean, you know, number of different denominations and churches and approaches. Is there a kind of a approach to rural areas that you think, yeah, that's going to work across the board? Or did you find within the 10, it's actually so individual that there's nothing, you can't say, well, what this is what you need to do if you're in a rural area?
Yeah, it's too soon to say. What has become clear is that the kinds of courses that you just described, like Alpha and Christianity Explore, work well in towns and cities where there's a reasonable population base and you can bring a bunch of people together. What there seems to be a need for in rural areas is more of a focus on personal spiritual disciplines, personal discipleship. You're not going to bring large numbers of people together into big celebration type events that will then encourage people. People are going to have to develop and sustain their faith, often in quite small groups or even in isolation. I'm a big fan of the work that Scott Brennan, who's one of the leaders of the community of Aidan and Hilda up in Lindisfarne, is doing in terms of advocating for a way of life, sort of basically neo-monastic self-discipline. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not part of a community as well, but we've always talked about personal faith and the need for a personal devotional life. And in any place where Christians are fairly isolated, that's got to be a major part of what we do, providing resources and support for people to sustain their faith one-to-one or in small groups rather than in larger groups. There's nothing new under the sun. It's often just a case of taking the things we already knew and just saying, okay, what's going to work in it? Or not what's going to work, what's useful or fruitful in this situation?
Sure. And if listeners want to read through something that's produced based on this work, is it likely to be published in the near future?
So the report has been published. The report is called What's in Our Hands? Subtitled The Rural Mission Learning Review, and you can get it from the Church Support Hub, which is a Church of England website. And if you Google Church Support Hub, it is churchsupporthub.org. You will find the report, What's in Our Hands, on there. And it's a 20-page report, so I've tried to keep it relatively concise, but everything I've been talking about and more is in that report.
Excellent. Thank you. Richard, I mentioned your fall from a mountain in my introduction.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, delighted to see you looking so well, I have to say. So it hasn't certainly put you off to mountaineering. Indeed, you've been running retreat style activities in the mountains. So tell me more about that in terms of how your own ministry's developed.
Yes. Well, I've spent most of my life living in small towns and villages, relatively close to larger population centres, but I am a small town boy at heart, and I love the rural area, and I love particularly the Scottish wilderness. That's where I find myself flourishing the most. It's where I feel closest to God, and I consider it an incredible privilege that I live just a couple of hours from some of the most beautiful countryside in the UK, and so I can just jump in my car and go wandering in the hills whenever I want. So I did have a serious accident, but I was never going to let that stop me, because it was too significant a place for me in terms of meeting God. And I can be slightly tongue-in-cheek about this, but people seem to meet God a lot in the mountains in the Bible.
Yeah.
Whether it's Moses, whether it's Elijah, whether it's the disciples going with Jesus up the Mount of Transfiguration. Mountains seem to be more important than buildings. And I quite like to see that church leaders, because you can see them twitch when I tell them that. So I'm now a qualified mountain leader, and I've trained to be a winter mountain leader. I've basically tried to improve my skills so that I don't have an accident of the same severity in future. I've written a book called Following Jesus in the Great Outdoors, where I try and explore the spirituality of the wilderness, and that's available through Grove Books. And I want to introduce people to the experience of wilderness places and what it means to meet God there. And I recognise that I have got now experience and skills to go out into quite remote places that actually people are a bit anxious to go into. So I basically take them and we go off. And sometimes we stay in retreat centres and go daily. Sometimes we'll go camping for two or three days and really disappear off into the middle of nowhere. And as part of some of that is just hanging around and talking and sharing life together. And some of it is a whole mix of spiritual practices and exercises during that time away, to give people time with God in those remote places. Again, it's not especially new. The Desert Fathers, the early monks in Egypt and Syria did this. And there's a whole spiritual tradition of wilderness spirituality that we can draw on. Jesus withdrew to lonely places to go and be with his Father. He got up early to go into the mountains to pray. So why shouldn't we?
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. What's the tag that you use for your work?
So I have a website called Just About Leading. I have a whole bunch of things on there, including a bit of a blog and information about the courses and retreats that I run. I call it Just About Leading because the website is Just About Leading. It's because sometimes I think I am just about leading, but also in my leadership, I want to be just and fair. And so it's a play on words to try and incorporate things that are important to me. So justaboutleading.co.uk is where you'll find information about me and about the retreats and courses that I run in the mountains.
Wonderful. Well, it's terrific as always to chat with you, Richard. It's been a few decades of conversations like this. So thank you so much for being on the show again.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Richard Tiplady, who had been looking at 10 different projects within the Church of England, particularly focused on rural areas. And you can look at the report by going to churchsupporthub.org and just scroll down and it's there available. Richard also mentioned his book with Grove Books, Following Jesus in the Great Outdoors, and his own website, justaboutleading.co.uk, and the retreats he leads or the mountain experiences called Wilderness for the Weary. So you can find out more about Richard and his ministry by going to that particular website. Fascinating conversation, talking about the leadership challenges of rural areas. I'm a bit biased because I come from a rural area, but certainly a key area for ministry. And it may be that someone listening to this is maybe moved to explore what they can be doing to catalyze God's work in places which don't typically have the light and resources that other places have. So I commend that idea to you. So this is Andy Peck, your host, thanking you for your company and looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.